It was a sight not seen since the dark days of the financial crisis. The heads of Citigroup, JPMorgan Chase, Morgan Stanley, Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, and two other banks sat down Wednesday before the House Financial Services Committee as a sort of report card 10 years after the financial crisis.
Tonight, the European Council decided to grant the United Kingdom a flexible extension of the Article 50 period until the 31st of October. This means an additional 6 months for the UK. During this time, the course of action will be entirely in the UK's hands. It can still ratify the withdrawal agreement, in which case the extension will be terminated.
I know that there is huge frustration from many people that I had to request this extension, and I sincerely regret the fact that I have not yet been able to persuade Parliament to approve a deal which would allow the UK to leave in a smooth and orderly way. But the choices we now face are stark and the timetable is clear. So we must now press on at pace with our efforts to reach a consensus on a deal that is in the national interest.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's April the 11th. It's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We've got lots to talk about today, everything from Brexit to wealth management, to international trade's impact on Illinois jobs. Looks like we'll be talking about Brexit at least until Halloween. You hear there in the opening montage that the decision on Brexit pushed back now again till October 31st of this year to give the United Kingdom time to figure out what it wants to do with Brexit, even after having a full 2 years at most to answer those questions and be unable to. So we'll be talking about Brexit for a little bit longer. This morning, too, we'll also be talking a little bit about interest rates. Yesterday's FOMC meeting minutes show that the Fed is still leaving the door open for possible interest rates. We'll hit on that in a little bit. On the broadcast today, Paul Delaney, the Vice President of Trade and International Policy at Business Roundtable, will be on to talk about a new study that shows that nearly 1.5 million jobs in Illinois are supported by international trade. So you'll see why it's so important that we get the trade situation settled with China and try to avoid anything with Europe as well. That'll be in our second segment this morning at about 5:38. And it is Thought Leader Thursday here on the broadcast. Doug Myers is in the big chair this morning. He will have a conversation with us about wealth management, some news in that arena this morning. So we'll bring in Doug, first up this morning, right after we check some headlines and market numbers, first to the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings this morning after stocks closed higher on Wall Street yesterday. At the close yesterday, the Dow was up just 7 points. This morning, futures are pointing toward flat opening, flat to negative opening on Wall Street, with Dow futures this morning up just 17 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures up just a fraction. Around the globe, in Europe, markets are up two, just a little bit to 0.5%, depending on where you look. Up a little bit in London, up a little bit in Germany, and up nearly 0.5% in France. In Asia, the markets ending the day mixed. The Nikkei up just a fraction. The Hang Seng down nearly a full percent. The Shanghai off nearly 1.5%. And oil in the U.S. is at $64.09 a barrel, which is down about 52 cents. The Federal Reserve leaving the door open for possible interest rate hikes if the economy improves later this year. Minutes released yesterday from the last meeting of the policymakers shows that they felt a modest increase might be appropriate if the economy grows as expected. The Central Bank's Federal Open Market Committee voted unanimously to hold interest rates steady at the March meeting, leaving its benchmark rate between 2.25% and 2.5%. The FOMC says it will remain patient before adopting any further increases. Robocalls will be the subject of the Senate subcommittee hearing today. The members of the Federal Communication Commission's recent report on initiatives and progress to end illegal robocalls. The hearing set to get underway at about 9 o'clock this morning, Chicago time. There is some concerning news if you have one of those devices from Amazon, listening devices, as some people are calling them this morning after learning that millions of people are having some of their voices heard by employees of Amazon. The goal is to help improve the software's understanding of language to better answer user requests. Those employees are required to sign non-disclosure agreements about what they hear. Amazon says only a small fraction of the audio is listened to and analyzed. Users can opt out of having their voice recording used in development of new features in the software policy's privacy settings. This report, as it was issued yesterday, the story suggested that the folks, and there are several different places around the world where people, employees are listening, have heard everything from fights among family members to one case, a child being abused, and in another case, in the worst case, a sexual assault happening. So that story happening, breaking this morning, with more details likely to come out throughout the day. Let's begin with Thought Leader Thursday here on the Opening Bell. Doug Myers is with us, Senior Vice President and the Chicago Private Client Market Leader at Associated Bank. Doug, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you.
Good to see you again. I want to have a conversation this morning about wealth management and sort of give our listeners a behind-the-scenes look at your job, what you do at Associated Bank, and have a larger conversation about how this idea of wealth management got started, what it means, where is it going. So maybe we could just set the table a little bit, tell our listeners what wealth management is, what we're talking about.
Sure. Well, thank you, Steve. I think the advent of wealth management started about 30 years ago or 40 years ago in Europe. And Europe had the three top private banks that were shrouded in secrecy over the years. And these, in the early days of wealth management, I think that the clients were dealing with high interest rates. There were a lot of privacy issues, and that's where the Geneva banks came into prominence, where they shrouded their clients in secrecy, and they were hiding from the IRS, and some of those issues prevailed. Excuse me. And then, about in the late 90s, the U.S. private banks started getting into this business, and the three largest U.S. banks started getting into the wealth management business. And so I think that's what started domestically this whole wealth management concept that we have today within the banks.
And it used to be used to be referred to as private banking, right?
Correct.
And that goes way back to the turn of the century.
It does. And private banking is really a subset or a division of the wealth management groups. It's certainly one of the three legs of the stool, so to speak, of the wealth management group. You've got investment management, you've got private banking, you've got institutional money management. And so private banking is certainly one subset of the wealth management departments.
When you say wealth management, or when I hear that term thrown around, I think that's something exclusively for really wealthy people or entities. That's not the case, is it?
It's not really the case. I think when you refer and use the term wealth management, it's, you know, we all have our wealth and we all have our savings, and it's developing a plan. It's developing a financial plan around your goals. And, you know, we all work to get to retirement, and we all want to have a nice nest egg in retirement. And the wealth management refers to growing that wealth, growing your wealth, so to speak, and being able to retire and live comfortably. And certainly Social Security plays a large part of that. Your individual retirement accounts play into that. Your 401ks play into that. And you have to have a comprehensive plan to get to where you want to be when you're 50 or 60 or 70 or whatever the age you want to retire at.
So when we come to check in at private banking and wealth management at Associated, it's not that there are better pencils and pens and you get a glass of champagne and the toasters are top end and it's all high end stuff. That's not the case.
Well, I think it used to be, but it's really not anymore. It's about one-on-one relationships and sitting down with your financial planner or sitting down with your private banker and developing a comprehensive plan.
And that's really important these days. We had a conversation on the program recently about how you really need to do a checkup on your wealth management from time to time. Are you saving enough? Are you doing the right things? Is your 401k, are you saving in your 401k? Do you have the right kinds of savings accounts, those kinds of things? And those are kinds of things that you do. Those are the kinds of the conversations you have, right?
Absolutely, Steve. And it's interesting because I was just reading in Barron's that the average saver puts 6.8% of his or her income into a retirement plan. And it's interesting because boomers save an average of 8.5%, which leads the pack. Your Generation Xers save about 7% of their monies, and then millennials are the lowest with about 6% savings rate. And so the goal is, as you said, to sit down with a financial advisor, to have a comprehensive plan, and to plan. And you have, you know, every year the markets are different, and you have to be well diversified in your investment planning and your portfolio planning to be able to have the returns you're going to need to retire.
We're going to talk more about diversification a little bit later, but I want to kind of delve into more of what you just said about the levels of savings. How do we know what is the right level, or is it different for every different person?
Well, it is different for every person, but there are plenty of models and plenty of platforms that you can use to develop a plan to say, I need X amount of income when I'm 50 or 60 or whatever the age may be. And, you know, everybody has different needs in terms of their children's education needs, their living needs, their expenses. And you want to be able to determine what is a realistic income level that I need from my investments. And that requires a lot of planning. It requires a lot of thought. It requires a lot of diversity in your portfolio to get to where you do want to be.
It also, too, takes some really deep discussions with your clients. The kinds of conversations about what do you expect your retirement to be like? What are your family situations? Talk to us a little bit about some of the deep discussions that are involved.
Well, we talk to a lot of our clients about being able to afford a vacation home. They might want to get out of Illinois, like a lot of people are talking about, just due to the state's finances, as we were talking about earlier this morning. But I think everybody has a different plan, and everybody has what they dream of, what they want their retirement to look like. And as you said, there's family issues, there's location issues, and you know, all this has to go into discussions with your financial advisor about, you know, getting to where you want to be.
Idea that some of what we're seeing now with wealth management or private banking is changing. We've had the conversation before about how automation is involved in artificial intelligence and technology. Is that the changing model of what you're doing?
It is. The technological changes are massive in the financial industry right now, and it helps us be more efficient. It helps clients be more educated. And when they sit down with their financial advisor, they're coming into the conversation knowing a lot more than they did previously because of the technology. Information is available to us on such a great level as opposed to how it used to be even 10 years ago. And that helps in the discussions and the planning of what they need to be.
How do you alleviate fear if I'm your client and I come in and I say, Doug, I'm kind of scared about retirement. I don't think I'm saving enough. I think I'm going to have health care issues. I'm not going to have enough money. How do you make me feel better?
Well, you just have to be diligent on your plan and stick with your plan. And you have to diversify in the different asset classes. You know, you might have some real estate investments. You might have some stocks. You might have some bonds. And in the stocks portfolio, you might have different classes of stock, you know, large cap, small cap. And you know, you do want to be diversified because every year the asset classifications differ in terms of their rate of returns. And you want to be diversified because you don't want all of your eggs in one basket in a class. For example, real estate might be down the 1 year, and you don't want your whole portfolio to go down just because of one class.
The need to diversify. I've been hearing a lot of analysts talk about that recently because of what appears to be a slowing economy, that maybe we're on our way into a slowdown. How do we even prepare to do that if that's what's coming?
Well, you have to sit down and make assumptions, but it's very important as you begin to get older, you want to have less risk in your portfolio. So when you're young, if you're one of those millennials who are saving, you want to be a little more aggressive in your early years and be less more conservative and less risky in your later years.
Are there any other kinds of planning that we can do? I know that there's some charitable gift ideas that we can think about, and some tax saving ideas too.
Well, that all goes into the wealth management puzzle because there are tax implications of portfolios. There are charitable issues that you want to give. And I think all these things go into a financial plan. Absolutely.
You mentioned the Gen Xers earlier in 7%. If I told you I'm only saving 7%, would I get a bad report card, or would you tell me to do more?
Not at all. I'd say, you know, let's sit down. Let's go over your goals. Let's go over your planning. What do you want to look like in 10, 20, 30 years? And let's stick to the plan and get there.
Doug, how can people get a hold of you and have this conversation one-on-one if they want?
They can call us direct. My direct line is 312-544-4600, and we'd love to have conversations around the whole wealth management issue.
Thanks for coming in. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Steve.
Doug Myers is the Senior Vice President and Chicago Private Client Market Leader with Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. And remember, you can hear and listen to our past conversations at WGNRadio.com on the opening bell page. Follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter, and head over to associatedbank.com/thoughtleadership to learn more about our thought leaders and to hear more conversations there.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of the opening bell. A new study shows nearly 1.6 million jobs in Illinois are supported by international trade. We want to dive some more into the data and get some analysis this morning from Paul Delaney, Vice President of Trade and International Policy at the Business Roundtable, group of executives, chief executive officers of major U.S. companies that formed to promote pro-business public policy. Paul, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning, Steve. Happy to be on the show. Thank you so much.
Looking at the summaries and some of the study data here, I think the thing that jumps off the page most at me is just how significant the numbers of jobs tied to trade have increased since 1992 in Illinois, up nearly 87%. Those are huge gains in numbers of jobs tied to trade.
Absolutely, and even more interesting, too, that those jobs have grown six times faster than job growth across the state that were not linked to trade. We put out this study, and we've done it every year to highlight how over time, really since before the NAFTA agreement went into effect, the importance of trade for communities, both exports and imports, has only grown. And today we see that one in five jobs in the United States depends on trade, and that's twice the level that it was back in 1992.
And also, too, just the sort of the top line, I think most people, and especially nowadays, hear nothing but negative news, it seems, about trade. As we continue this trade war with China and other issues, but the number of people in the world and the amount of business being done in the world, you really can't operate in a vacuum, can you?
That's absolutely right. I mean, 95% of the people in the world who can buy U.S. products and services are outside the United States. And 80% of the purchasing power is outside the United States. So, you know, we've been very focused on highlighting the importance of the United States businesses and farmers and workers competing globally. And one of the real priorities for us, which we highlighted in our study, is how important the trade with Canada and Mexico is for all states. You know, and in particular for Illinois, you mentioned the 1.6 million jobs that depend on trade. Almost 500,000 of those jobs specifically depend on trade with Canada and Mexico.
Yeah, and so that's significant. It also gives us a pause to think, okay, it's time to get the trade situation settled right with China, and also have Congress get to work on approving this replacement to NAFTA. Those should be priorities for our government, right?
Absolutely. One of our top priorities and one of the purposes of this study is to highlight how important preserving and strengthening trade with our neighbors, with Canada and Mexico, are, and the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement that was signed by the leaders in December is now under consideration by Congress. And the Business Roundtable and our CEOs are strong supporters of passing that through Congress. And we've been working with Democrats and Republicans and the administration and doing outreach like your show today to really highlight how important this trade relationship is and this agreement's an opportunity to update it.
And it goes further beyond just these jobs, right? I mean, there's sort of a ripple effect that goes through the economy. And well, you can use Illinois again as an example, but the lower prices, the increased choices for Illinois companies and families, these import prices that we watch very closely sometimes here in the opening bell, this goes not only through our farm communities, but through small communities all across the state.
That's absolutely right. And the, really, the benefits of trade are across the board. And you know, a couple of interesting statistics is just between 2007 and 2017, the price of televisions has dropped 87%. The price of computers has dropped 64%. The cost of toys has decreased, you know, 44%. And it's often the products, you know, that families need the most, you know, for their children, to put on their tables, that this is where trade is so important, because it gives you options at lower cost, and it also gives us new markets for our products abroad.
Let's look further into the report. Are there any surprises here about, the Illinois' top exports, the countries that we trade with? What does the report say about those issues, and are there any surprises that people might find?
Well, one, and I wouldn't necessarily say surprise, but Canada and Mexico are the top two destinations for Illinois' exports. So again, that just shows the centrality of passing the USMCA through Congress and continuing to strengthen this North American platform. Also interesting, you know, Illinois is in the top five of all state exporters in 38 different industries, and are number one in the agriculture and construction machinery exports, also number one in oilseeds and grains exports on the ag side, and number one in railroad rolling stock. So Illinois really is a trading powerhouse state, and particularly with our neighbors to the north and to the south.
Yeah, and I thought it was fascinating, too, that Illinois is second in bakery and tortilla products. I wouldn't have guessed that.
Well, it's interesting. You know, we work with our partners at the Trade Partnership, and we run this study now. We've done this since 2007, and each year, yes, there's sort of these individual sectors that are stronger than one might expect, and that is one of them.
Paul, I have to ask you this question. How do we protect these jobs? I know we've talked about making sure that these trade agreements get done, but how do we, if this was a garden, how do we tend it so that we don't lose any of these positions?
Well, part of it does go to the agreements, but why the USMCA is so important is that, you know, the economy has changed a lot since the original NAFTA over 25 years ago. And so in areas such as IP-intensive, intellectual property-intensive, or the digital economy, a lot of these rules are being set today. And so for the United States, it's incredibly important that when we look at the sectors and the industries and the companies, the U.S. companies that are most competitive, as well as our agriculture sector, that we work with our trading partners, as we have in this U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, to update those rules to ensure that our intellectual property is protected, to prevent counterfeiting, to sort of enhance our ability to trade, you know, through what's called, you know, customs modernization. So there's a whole range of new issues that we need to grapple with our key trading partners and bring the highest standard, because that allows the U.S. companies to compete best at home and American workers to compete at home and abroad.
What does the report, and I know it doesn't focus specifically on this, but is there any impact of what we've been seeing over the last couple of years in terms of this trade dispute with China? Is it having a toll? Is it taking any kind of toll on Illinois?
Well, certainly, in a range of areas, when tariffs have been put in place and retaliatory tariffs, they operate effectively as a tax, right? So that's a cost. On China, you know, we've been quite supportive of the president and the administration's effort to really reach at some core structural problems that have been really building over years in China. And these relate to intellectual property rights protection, requirements of U.S. companies that try to invest in China. So we are hopeful that these discussions that have been continuing at the highest level will produce an agreement that addresses those longstanding issues, and also that allows both parties to pull down these tariffs so we can reduce those costs, and that'll help U.S. companies compete better.
Here in Illinois and in Chicago, we have a new administration coming in. The governor, Pritzker, is new. We have a new mayor of Chicago. How does a changing administration potentially impact some of these trade relationships?
Well, I think one of the important points is that we've always found at the mayor level, at the governor level, you know, the mayors and the governors see the community impact and the state impact of trade, and are often the best diplomats and the best communicators for their communities as of why we need trade agreements, why we should be opening markets to our goods and services. So that's not actually been a partisan or even an administration issue, that as administrations change very quickly, they see these same numbers we've talked about today, and they recognize how important important keeping these markets open to U.S. ag products and goods and services are. So we very much value and appreciate the partnerships we've had with mayor offices and the governor offices to make this point together and to ensure that the American workers and American businesses have a fair shake.
Well, Paul, we appreciate you coming on today and sharing some of the data here with us and some of the insight into this. We would like to have you back sometime soon.
Happy to do it, Steve. Really appreciate your time this morning, and have a great day.
All right, you too. Paul Delaney, Vice President of Trade and International Policy at Business Roundtable. The name of the report, Trade and American Jobs, the Impact of Trade on U.S. and State-Level Employment. It's the 2019 update, and we're going to link out to some of this in the podcast of the Opening Bell a little bit later on this morning. And make sure you check out the Business Roundtable online at businessroundtable.org.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures pointing toward a flat opening on Wall Street later this morning. Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures all up fractionally this morning. Now the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we take a quick look at yesterday's market activity, a bounce back for lean hog futures at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. June lean hogs ended up $1.20 a hundredweight, while June live cattle down 45 cents. April feeder cattle down $1.15 a hundredweight. In the grain market, weather becoming a factor as concerns about that blizzard across much of the plains in the Midwest threatening to delay plantings came into play yesterday. Traders monitoring the progress of that winter storm forecast to dump as much as 30 inches of wet, heavy snow, so we'll continue to watch that one. And the grain market yesterday, we saw the July wheat contract down 2¾ cents, July corn up 2 cents, and July soybeans up 4 cents a bushel in yesterday's trade. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of stories before we leave you this morning. One of China's three major state-owned airlines says it has joined carriers that are asking Boeing for compensation after the use of its 737 MAX jetliner went down following two crashes. Those aircraft have been grounded around the world. Chinese media cited executives of China Eastern Airlines Limited as saying that the carrier has lodged claims with Boeing over the disruption. The report gave no financial details but says the impact on China Eastern was limited because the suspension came during a slow travel period. Also this week, a Chinese aircraft leasing company said it will decide how to proceed with planned 737 MAX purchases once it sees how Boeing resolves some of those issues. Patagonia is suing Budweiser's parent company for brewing and selling a beer called Patagonia. The outdoor clothing manufacturer's suit accuses AB InBev of infringing on the Patagonia trademark. The packaging for the beer, which came out last year, includes a silhouette of a mountain and the name Patagonia in bold lettering. The mountain silhouette is very similar to Patagonia's logo. 46-year-old clothing company says the beer maker is doing everything possible to make it look like Patagonia beer is being sold by Patagonia Clothing when it is not. Now let's take a look at the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for today, which is Thursday, April 11th. Producer prices for March and the weekly look at first-time claims for unemployment benefits are due this morning. Analysts expect to see producer prices ticking up 0.3% over the last month. February's 0.1% rise was the last data we had on that. The experts forecast 211,000 initial jobless claims last week. That would be 9,000 more than the previous week totals. So those will be the two big economic reports leading things off this morning. We'll also see a couple of Fed speakers out there today, John Williams and James Bullard. The EIA natural gas report also coming today, a report on money supply and the Fed balance sheet due as well. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, April the 11th.